This podcast is a proud member of the Lamb Podcasting Network. Find the network at largeassmovieblogs.com.
Welcome to the Really Awful Movies Podcast, a celebration of low-budget cinema.
The sleep of reason gives birth to monsters.
Hi, I'm Chris, and along with Jeff, we're bringing you the very best and worst of horror, sci-fi, action, exploitation, kung fu, and women in prison movies from the 1970s to today. Be sure and check out reallyawfulmovies.com for reviews, interviews, lists, and terrific movie giveaways.
Can you count, suckers? I say the future is ours! If you can count,
come on, Sirens, we're with you!
Go ahead, bro!
Now look what we have here before us. We've got the Saracens sitting next to the Jones Street boy. We've got the Moon Runners, right by the Van Cortlandt Rangers. Nobody is wasting nobody. That is a miracle. And miracles is the way things ought to be. You're standing right now with 9 delegates from 100 gangs. And there's over 100 more. That's 20,000 hardcore members. 40,000 counting affiliates. And 20,000 more not organized, but ready to fight. 60,000 soldiers. Now, there ain't but 20,000 police in the whole town. Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
From our downtown Toronto headquarters, here's episode 26. Walter Hill's The Warriors.
Can you dig it?
Can you dig it?
Can you dig it, Chris?
I can dig it.
I can dig it. I'm digging it.
Yeah.
And we dig this film.
Mm-hmm.
So, tell us about The Warriors. What's The Warriors about?
It's about a ragtag group of gangsters who are trying to fight their way back to their home turf after meeting with a bunch of other gangs up in the Bronx, New York, to consolidate everyone's power and to, I guess, fight the police, the 20,000 strong police,
right.
Who are encroaching on their turf,
right.
To quote Cyrus.
Who's Cyrus?
Cyrus is the head gang leader who organizes all these guys in a big meetup.
Big conclave, really.
Yeah. In a park. I think it was filmed in Manhattan, but it's meant to be the Bronx.
Mm-hmm.
And interestingly, I guess they had problems filming this thing because actual gangs were concerned about these guys encroaching. Not to mention the logistical, you know, difficulties of trying to get 1,000 people to, you know, riot on cue. But we'll get to that. I guess the Warriors is based on Anabasis, which is a famous tale by the Greek writer and warrior Xenophon, and it chronicles, I guess, Cyrus, who was a prince of Persia, who conscripted 10,000 Greek mercenaries to help him fight. And when he got killed, these mercenaries were sort of stuck in Asia Minor with nowhere to go and nothing really to do and no mandate. And they had to fight their way back to Greece. And so that was a novel adaptation of this tale was by Saul Urich, who wrote this book. And so in lieu of Greek mercenaries, we got Coney Island, multi-ethnic, gangsters who wear leather and
warrior
patches.
It's interesting because Yurik, I mean, he wrote the book. He basically adapted that story, but he put gangs in. The reason why he chose gangs is because he wanted to show a real depiction of gangs after West Side Story. Basically, just, you know, made him look like a bunch of
finger snapping,
you know.
When you're a jet, you're a jet.
There you go. So, I mean, it's interesting because when I said to you, what's the Warriors about? I mean, the plot cannot be more paper thin. It's about a group, it's about a gang trying to make, it's about people trying to go home.
Yeah.
On the subway. That's my life. That's what I do every day. I'm at work. I want to go home on the subway.
Yeah, except you're not being chased by 5,000 gang members.
You don't know, man. I work at Scarborough for those.
This is part of East End Toronto that's frequently maligned, and for good reason. It's the crime epicenter of Toronto. But
So, I mean, the plot is paper thin. However, I mean, this movie is it style over substance? You might say, but what style? I mean,
yeah, great style.
The thing about the Warriors that makes it such an enduring cult classic is it's so fucking iconic. Mm-hmm. Everything is iconic from the first frame to the last. Even the title font in, done in graffiti style, that's iconic.
Yeah, that's really cool.
We'll get to the gangs later on, but the Furies, of course.
You know,
the baseball Furies, right? That's iconic. I believe
Eminem has D12 or one of has a music video where they're dressed as the members of this gang inspired by the Bronx Bombers, the New York Yankees, and they wield baseball bats and they wear pinstripes, but their faces are painted in a real badass way.
Yep.
And I guess we'll get to the gangs later, but
one of his former gangs. I kind of gave names to a bunch of them. So
good.
But and speak of iconic, I mean, there was a recent episode of The Simpsons where it was pretty much, I'm not going to say shot for shot because it's anime. It was like a frame for frame recreation of the Warriors. And again, I mean, the music's iconic, In the City by Joe Walsh, right? Nowhere to Run To. I mean, this whole movie
Nowhere to Run To, baby. Nowhere to Hide.
Yeah, now, of course, this wasn't the original version by Martha and the Vandellas. They used a different version. It was Martha and the Vandellas, I think, right?
I believe so.
Yeah, I Google it anyway.
Yeah.
But everything. This is an iconic movie. I mean, if you haven't seen The Warriors, when you see it, you'll recognize it because it's permeated pop culture in so many different ways.
Referenced by Old Dirty Bastard, who's got, I forget the lyric, but a Wu-Tang Clan or solo song. You know, Warriors come out to play. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's. But anyway, I guess.
So as you mentioned, I mean, the beginning of this movie, we have a sort of conclave in the Bronx.
And a big gang meetup.
Which kind of makes it funny, because when the movie begins, now this is the director's cut that we're going to talk about. This is Walter Hill's director's cut. So this was not including the original theatrical version, but in the director's cut, it says sometime in the future. So, whatever. I mean, there's nothing really futuristic about this movie, but
in the future, I guess there's no cops to be seen anywhere.
Well, there you go. Well, there were some cops, an undercover one in a park, which we'll get to later, but
pretty ineffectual.
Yeah, exactly. But in the future, I guess, I mean, New York City is divided into a bunch of turfs, and each turf has their own colorfully dressed gang, and I guess we can assume that they're constantly fighting amongst themselves, and not amongst themselves, but gang versus other gang for turf, and Cyrus, who's the leader of a gang by the name of the Riffs, right?
Yeah. The
Gramercy Riffs. He decides to hold this giant conclave, and he asks all the gangs to come, leave all the weapons at home.
Red herring alert, leave all your weapons at home.
And he's going to deliver this rousing speech, which you guys heard at the beginning of this podcast, that's going to unite the Warriors. Unite all the gangs, right? However, something happens at the conclave something unforeseen, and that is Cyrus gets assassinated by the leader of
The Rogues.
The Rogues, and this gang is I guess you would say they're the villains of this piece, right?
Yeah.
Their leader is a gentleman by the name of Luther, who looks a lot like Geddy Lee, in my opinion. Do you agree?
He's got a jutting chin. He doesn't really look too intimidating.
Not at all.
Compared to the Gramercy Riffs, who look like Black Power, sort of real hardcore gang.
Yeah, I mean, before I learned the names of the Riffs, I called them the African Kimono Gang, because they're basically just wearing kimonos. But yeah, I mean, they're like, hundreds strong, and they're all just really strong and powerful. And
yeah, and they're doing military precision goose stepping kind of thing. They're a real army, whereas the other ones not so much.
But the rogues, I mean, they're just sort of this ragtag gang of, you know, guys who, you know, I guess have a real chip on their shoulder.
Yeah.
And the thing about Luther, the leader, I mean, not only does he look like Geddy Lee, he's also got a very squeaky voice, kind of akin to Geddy Lee as well. And he also delivers the most iconic line in the movie, which will...
Which we'll get to.
We'll get to. So, so anyway, so basically, they go to this conclave, and Cyrus is delivering that rousing speech, and, you know, he gets assassinated, and right away Luther goes, "The warriors did it! The warriors did it!" And he pins it on the warriors, so the warriors, they're in enemy territory, and they gotta get the fuck home.
Yeah.
And home is Coney Island.
So they're on the opposite side of the city completely. Mm-hmm. And as they put it in the movie, they got to bop their way back to Coney.
Exactly. Well, yeah, because they're all called boppers, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. And the only way to get there, back to their turf, because, again, they say they've never been up in the Bronx, so they got to get from the north end down to the tail end of Brooklyn, down by the seaside. And the only way they can do this is by subway. And now it's interesting, too, as you get into this movie, these are supposed to be real badasses, and these are 20,000 strong, ostensibly gang members meeting in this park, and they're very diligent about paying their tokens when they go into the turnstiles.
There was a few
of them jumped, but for the most part, it's very orderly. They could have been Canadian.
It's weird too. I mean, even like riding the subway seems to be a little bit of kind of like they're almost befuddled in a sense.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, the warriors. So I mean, they are heroes, right? And they're eight strong.
Eight strong, and in Saul Urich, the novelist, he worked with wayward youth, for lack of a better term, and his original conception if things had taken a different turn, we would be flashing gang signals. He envisioned the group, the Warriors gang, to be Puerto Ricans. So, and then for the purposes of to make the movie more palatable, it became a multi-ethnic rainbow get-along gang of white guys and Puerto Ricans.
Actually, it's funny because it's like not just Europe
welcome
himself,
back, Cotter.
But there you go. In fact, one of the Warriors looks exactly like Horshack. He's a dead ringer for... not Horshack, sorry.
Well, that too, yeah.
Horshack, and then there's another one that looks like Freddie Boom Boom Washington.
Yeah.
So, I mean...
Well, and the Puerto Rican Jew. I forget his name, yeah.
Not exactly, though.
Yeah. Damn.
What's his name?
Damn, welcome back, Cotter.
Epstein. Yeah. I got a note. You know, sign your runner. Not only Urich himself, but Walter Hill. He basically wanted all the gangs to be either black and or Hispanic. And the producer said, no, you got to have, you know, white people as well.
Yeah.
So so our warriors are eight guys, all wearing vests, leather vests that say Warriors on the back. Some have shirts under the vest, some don't. Their leader is Swan, played by Michael Beck. Michael Beck is great in this movie, and I don't think he really had much of an illustrious career, although he did star in the notorious flop, which, thanks to Robin Bougie, I fucking love, which is called Xanadu.
Yeah, it's an Olivia Newton-John vehicle.
Right,
We'll be talking about that on a future podcast.
We're going to be doing a Xanadu podcast, without a doubt. I mean, it's a great one. Another notable member of the Warriors is Ajax, and that's he's played by James Remar.
Yeah, James Remar, you'll know as the dad from Dexter.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he's aged rather well.
But he was really young in this thing.
He was
really
super young.
And he's sort of like Swan's nemesis within the Warriors.
Yeah, they're sort of vying for leadership, and he's sort of
power struggle. Yeah,
well put. he's sort of the hothead who just wants to fight everybody. But again, that leads to his quick capture by NYPD. The rest are looking to flee, but he decides to hold back and, you know, I guess hit on a woman on a bench as they're fleeing on a park bench. Mm-hmm. And she turns out to be a UC, an undercover cop.
Yep.
And when he tries to put the moves on her, well...
Very aggressively.
Yeah, very aggressively. Yep. Like attempted, I guess, rape, shall we say.
Basically, yeah.
And cops just pounce.
She handcuffs him to the bench, and he tries in vain to flee, and he's moving the bench around saying, let me out. But the cops
and I guess a lot of people were sort of upset by that because he was such a charismatic guy. They wanted him to survive.
Mm-hmm.
And excuse me while I pop my
Blue Ribbon here. Beer. Yep.
We're enjoying a couple jars of jam here on the podcast.
As we want to do.
Yeah.
Before I describe some of these gangs, and again, like, I mean, they're so...
They run the gamut.
I mean, we got it again. I mean, I'll...
The Gramercy Riffs, pretty badass. You would not want to mess with them.
And speaking of badass, I mean, this was, you know, despite taking place sometime in the future, I mean, this was, again, pre-Julianification New York. So, I mean, the subways were just, you know, strewn with graffiti. And, you know, I mean, there's not a lot of... we do see... New York, but not a lot. You know, they don't go to Times Square or anything like that. But I mean, this is a gritty film, right? And the opening scene is really, really gritty as they're heading up to the conclave. And,
yeah.
So they get there, and there's this litany of gangs. And I mean, some of the gangs have names. Like, we learned that there's a gang called the Orphans, a gang called the Rogues, of course the Warriors, the Riffs. But then there's like the Purple Vest Gang, the Mimes.
Yeah, the Purple Vest Gang, they kind of look like they got this sort of Temptations outfit.
Yeah, the mimes are hilarious. I mean, you know, it's like, oh yeah, we want to strike fear in the hearts of, you know, people.
By not talking,
by like dressing as Marcel Marceau. I mean, you know, so we got the Asian Commandos. You know, these are a bunch of Asians wearing like, you know, military fatigues.
In the, for those of you who are familiar with New York, Soho area, south of Houston Street, Chinatown. So they got, and I've got to say, pretty stereotypical triad sort of gangster guys with, I believe they have these conical bamboo hats. And sort of like Chairman Mao type uniform. They're very stereotypical. It's hilarious.
There is a gang that's named because on the back of their yellow satin jackets are the Electric Eliminators. Then there's the gang I named the Black Tank Tops because that's pretty much all there. I think they're actually the punks. They call them the punks.
Yeah.
And then there's the Silver Jackets. A lot of them, I mean, they're just defined by what they're wearing, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you have the purple wool hats. Those go the straw hats. And... two of my favorites, the roller skating gang, right?
Yes.
Which we'll talk about, I think, a bit later, because, you know, we're going to talk about the efficacy of being on roller skates when you're involved in
a
street brawl.
Yeah, yeah.
But my absolute favorite band, Dexys Midnight Runners.
Yeah.
I mean, this was a gang that were basically dressed up in, like, overalls with, like, you know, without a shirt, and they look like Dexys Midnight Runners. I expect them to break out
to an
edition of Come on, Eileen.
So, yeah, basically the entire plot chronicles warriors bopping their way back to Coney.
Yeah,
and they have to fight some of these gangs when they encroach on their turf. So there's a subway fire.
Right.
They have to get off the subway.
Because there's some sort of pirate radio station. You have to assume like that only goes out to like the members of these boppers, these gang members. Because you know, like this, you see this. You don't even ever see the DJ. You just see the lips, and she's like, "Okay, well, the Warriors are bopping their way back to Coney Island." And
good luck, Warriors.
Good luck, Warriors. Mm-hmm. So basically, yeah, I mean, they're then that's when she plays Nowhere to Run because I mean they're hunted. I mean they're hunted, and the other gangs are the huntees. So as they're heading back, they end up in the turf of the Orphans. Now the Orphans are
led by a guy who looks like David Schwimmer from Friends.
Yeah, exactly. And they're really, really pathetic because I mean, not only were they not invited to the conclave, right, at all.
they're disrespected.
Right. But we know that they suck because they're just dressed in like khaki t-shirts and jeans. Like they don't have anything flashy about them, you know? So but the thing about the Orphans and their turf is that there's a young lady who resides on their turf, and
Her name is Mercy.
Mercy,
and she's looking to to increase her station. Mm-hmm. So she pretty much abandons the Orphans.
Oh, the Hawaiian shirt gang. That was another one. Nothing more intimidating than a good old Hawaiian shirt. But anyway, continue.
Mercy obviously sees that she's attached her wagon to this sort of sad sack bunch of loser gangs, a gang that doesn't even have a proper uniform. They wear khakis and a shirt. So she leaves them for the tougher, clearly more badass Warriors.
Right.
And she hits it off with the leader of the Warriors. They have great sexual chemistry.
Juan, yep.
Mm-hmm. So she becomes a de facto member of Warriors.
Of the Warriors,
And so I think they're given a pass as long as they don't...
The thing about the Orphans is that basically they said, you guys can come through our turf, whatever. But then Mercy sort of said, what, you guys are a bunch of pussies? Come on, you know?
Yeah.
And then there was
she calls them out.
There was a point where then the Orphans then wanted to fight the Warriors, but they threw a Molotov cocktail at a car and they managed to use that as a diversion. And escape.
So now they're walking, I guess, through some of the subway tunnels in New York City with this girl in tow.
And the other thing is too, I mean, the one of the directives that Swan gave is if we do split up in any way possible, we meet at Union Station.
Union Station, again, for those of you who know...
Or Union Square.
Union Square, right. For those of you who know New York, that's where NYU is, and that's where the preppiest gang has their turf. So Union Square, this is where the roller skating overalls rugby shirt gang is. That's their turf.
Right.
So you get this ridiculous bathroom brawl between, again, if you're going to be involved in a fist fight, you do not want to be on roller skates.
Right.
It reminds me of this terrible joke from, this was a staple of 90s humor. What's the toughest thing about rollerblading?
I don't know.
Telling your parents you're gay. Okay.
That's a bit of a microaggression.
Yeah,
there,
microaggression.
Chris.
Yeah, sorry.
Maybe it's a macroaggression. Yeah. So, but no, in an earlier podcast, we were talking about the Warriors. So we talked about the Warriors a lot, and I mentioned, like, if you want to defeat a bunch of a gang of Warriors kids, just carry a sack of marbles and throw it on the ground. That's it. I mean,
stick out your foot.
Yeah, I mean, the reality is the Warriors, I mean, they're only eight strong, as I said before, and then their numbers do dwindle. I mean,
one guy gets shoved in front of a train.
Yeah, by the police.
Yeah. And the guy's caught by the undercover cop.
But they can take care of themselves. And, I mean, I guess the most iconic gang, as we said before, would be the Furies, the one baseball Furies. And despite the fact they look fucking badass, they're not great fighters. I mean, the Warriors make short work of them.
Yeah,
they
despite their baseball bats and everything.
Yeah, and the Warriors end up picking up their bats, and then now they have weapons. And, and then, like I said, like, you know, the journey continues, similar to, Homer's Odyssey or something, right? Heading home. I mean, there's a lot of allusions, I guess you would say, to Greek mythology. But at the same time, I mean, this is a comic book, right? And again, this was not in the original theatrical version of the Warriors, but in the director's cut, they included a lot of comic book panel transitions, which I loved as a comic fan. I thought it was really effective. Some Warriors purists don't like that at all. They say it was much more effective without those transitions. But we were discussing this movie earlier before we started recording this podcast, and you were talking about it being a comic book, and you were saying how the gang's kind of sort of like...
Yeah, the Joker and everything, the Riddler, all this stuff. It's very cartoonish.
Yeah.
And the violence was fashioned that way as well. They didn't want to make it too violent. They wanted to make people... sort of make it more cartoonish and more more accessible. They didn't want solid beatdowns, which is, I think, if they were to remake this, they'd probably make the gangs very, very hyper-realistic and include lots and lots of gore, which probably to its detriment, but you never know. It'd be interesting to see.
So, as the Warriors are trying to make their, I mean, they're being pursued, you know, doggedly. Because again, I mean, they're being blamed for the assassination of Cyrus.
Yeah.
But then some information becomes known that maybe the Warriors did do it. But the gang that's pursuing them most doggedly is the Rogues, because the leader of the Rogues is the one that actually killed Cyrus. So it's in their best interest. Pin it on somebody else, and guess well, spoiler alert, they make their way back to CI, but I mean, here's the Rogues. I mean, and now we get to what I guess the most iconic moment, you know, the clinking of the bottles. And,
this was improvised by the guy who plays Luther. They had 2 minutes and they needed some way, I think, of just filling time and sort of goading the Warriors once they got to them. Mm-hmm. So they're in the Coney Island boardwalk and they're driving in a hearse. And they needed this actor, whose name escapes me right now, but they needed him to do something to goad this Warrior gang into...
This is the Geddy Lee-esque guy.
The Geddy Lee, with the giant jutting chin. He looks like a cast member of Rent.
Yep.
And he finds some bleachers, digs behind them, and gets some beer bottles they used to sell, miniature, sort of stubbies. We call them in Canada, in 70s beer bottles. And he clinks them together.
Yep.
And again, this is iconic. This was referenced by Old Dirty Bastard. Warriors come out to play, yay!
Mm-hmm.
Warriors! And this is quite chilling. And apparently this was inspired by... the guy lived in a bad neighborhood.
Yes.
And he had, a crackhead neighbor who used to say... I think his name is David, the actor. David! Yeah, so it's just a... Really, it was quite... it's quite sinister.
Yeah, and he keeps repeating, "Warriors come out to play." He gets more and more kind of like, you know, his voice becomes a bit more shrill, a bit more high pitched, and more psychotic.
And that's what I guess this film concludes as a sort of spaghetti western type confrontation on the beach,
Mexican standoff
between the Rogues
and the Rogues.
Yeah.
Yep.
And I guess we won't...
That's my Good and the Bad and the Ugly. You know, Morricone.
No, that's and pretty
that's Whistling Styles of Christopher Lombardo.
No copyright clearance for that one.
There you go.
So, yeah, definitely. And this is definitely worth checking out. A very interesting, a very atmospheric, albeit extremely campy, corny, but just fun-filled
and really,
movie.
I'm going to say again, paper-thin when it comes
paper-thin
to the plot.
Paper-thin plot.
Character development,
and,
what have you. But.
Yeah, much to the chagrin of Saul Urich, who, again, he envisioned it as...
Because you've read the novel.
Yes.
You've read the source material. I haven't.
And
so, yeah.
He envisioned his gang to be would be Puerto Ricans. Mm-hmm. And he was, despite what James Remar said about Cyrus, he hated the portrayal of Cyrus. He said he was a bad actor. And because he was on set during the filming of this thing with Walter Hill. He said he couldn't act. But that has
He was somewhat over the top in camera.
Yeah,
but it's become...
But it's become just something that's just indelible. It's
indelible,
just incredible.
Endearing,
and
iconic.
I kind of like it. It's overly dramatic, and he says at one point, there ain't but 20,000 police in the whole town, but this is our turf. And I hope I'm doing him justice there, but it's really fucking cool. So
one wonders what would have happened had the conclave been successful and all the gangs did unite and as one and took over New York City. I mean, that would have been something.
It
to
would
see.
Have been something. And I guess in the aftermath of this film's release, there were some stabbings. I guess because gangs were all going to see this film, as did everyone, because it was a minor hit at
the time.
It pulled in, I think, $30 million. It was the budget was maybe three.
Three.
So it became almost notorious for, again. I guess corrupting youth and that. So,
but besides him not being satisfied with Cyrus as an actor, didn't you mention there were some other things he was dissatisfied with as well?
Well, he was dissatisfied with a lot, but that was, I mean, the ethnicity of his gang, the poor performance. But I think he finally came around to it when I think it was his daughter or his niece or something. They finally just said, you know, this is really cool, and he just finally relented at the end, and ultimately they bought the rights to it. What can you do? There's only so much say you
well,
can have.
There you
you
go.
Sell
I
your
mean,
script.
How many movie adaptations of
Greek
novels,
legends?
You know?
Yeah,
there's always something, you know, that gets lost from the page to the screen.
Oh, for sure.
However, not having read the source material and just looking at this as a film, I look at this as a real, like I said before, an iconic classic, a cult classic. You know, even before having seen The Warriors, I mean, I think I saw it for the first time about 4 years ago. I knew The Warriors. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because I'd seen them I saw them referenced in so many other things. So,
for
I mean,
sure.
This is, again, one of those movies that you sort of have to see. I mean, even if, you know, whether you're a fan of low-budget cinema or not, it's become such a part of the cultural milieu, so to speak, right? You got to see The Warriors.
It's inspired costume, like, themed costume parties, In New York City bars, they've had dress as your favorite Warriors gang. Yep. So it really is incredible.
I would dress as the Dexys Midnight Runners gang myself.
we didn't mention it, but there's a gang of sort of Mad Max type guys who hunts them down in a truck.
The punks.
All
they were called the punks.
They were the punks.
Yeah,
I thought they were the something. I forget what. But
well, yeah,
it doesn't matter.
Heads, yep.
Okay. Yeah. There's really, again, it runs the gamut from extremely campy to extremely sinister, but definitely check it out.
So, the opening question is, can you dig it? And I'm going to ask you yet again, Chris, do you dig The Warriors?
Oh, I dig it for sure. It's incredibly atmospheric, and again, chronicling a time in New York that's since passed. And even in Coney Island, they had issues with the Warriors flashing their gang colors. I've got friends in Brighton Beach. I know Coney Island pretty well, and It's interesting to capture that time. The opening is iconic with the Ferris wheel. That's really, really super cool. And just detailing a time that, I guess, pre-Giuliani, we've discussed it as well, where New York really had a gritty aesthetic that's since been lost when you know, the Disneyfication of Times Square and all that, our favorite grindhouse sort of, and East Village kind of hangouts have sort of bitten the dust.
I know.
Whether it's CBGBs or what have you.
Yep. So, I mean, you know, it's customary in our podcast that we do a sort of what have you learned and we give it a star rating. What did you learn from The Warriors?
I learned that despite being scofflaws and hard-ass gangsters, they're pretty diligent about depositing those tokens.
Okay.
Yeah. They're pretty good about it.
Well, I mean,
I guess the NYPD, not a very efficacious police force. They sent in about four or five cop cars to disperse this gang meeting in the Bronx Park. But other than that, they're nowhere to be found, cops anywhere. And you'd think they would have sent in the fucking, National Guard after the gang meeting in the Bronx there.
Mm-hmm. I learned that if you're a gang in New York City, sometime in the future, it's all about the fashion, the finery, man.
Yeah.
It's all about the way of the sartorial...
splendors.
There you go. And, of course, I learned that if you're going to go into a fight with, honestly, just wear sensible footwear. Roller skates is not good. Not the most efficacious, pair of footwear.
Yeah.
Star rating is it's amazing because, I'm extolling the virtues of the Warriors. I'm not going to give it more than 3 stars. And the reason is because, like I said before, the plot is paper thin. But at the same time, I recommend people watching it. What do you give it?
Yeah, 4 star for me.
Just
incredibly atmospheric. Pretty dumb, ultimately. Pretty weak dialogue. Mm-hmm. But it has its charm. Lots of action. Just tons of... compelling suspense, and the narrative is propelled by these guys just being chased, and so it's pretty much 2 nights in the life of a group of 7. Started out as 8, I guess it dwindled to 6 at one point.
Well, considering one was arrested, at the end of it all, it was 6. Yeah,
people being chased, and everyone can relate to that.
Well, I mean, look, everybody can relate to just wanting to get the fuck home, especially when you're on the south. I don't know. I mean, for those of you that. If you live in Toronto, you know the TTC is our transit system is not the most reliable of all. So, sometimes trying to get home from work is a bit of a... I feel like I'm a warrior or a fury or something like that. So, I mean, it's relatable. I mean, and again, as I said before, I work in Scarborough, so sometimes I do have a gang akin to... the silver jacket is coming after me. So, yeah, I dig it. It's a 3-star for me, but I totally dig it. And I think our listeners will dig it as well. So
for sure. Thanks for listening. And for more, check out reviews every Monday, Wednesday, sometimes Thursday. www.reallyawfulmovies.com. And we'll talk to you soon.
Take care. Thank you.